Well, Dennis, I just found out why Gene Loving is rich, and I'm poor. Apparently, in 1962, I zigged when I should have zagged. Your 50th anniversary show was first broadcast in 1978. But this afternoon, it's 1990, and a lot of things have changed. And Friday afternoon, Dick Lamb and Gene Loving found each other again. Bill Walker, a 35-year veteran in the sales department of WGH, was in the company of Bill Bills and Mike Russell, myself at WFOG. Dave Dessler, first a WGH fan in 1955 as a, well, pre-teenager, then an engineer later for 17 years at WGH. Dave is responsible now for the fact that you can hear our voice here at WFOS, where he's the chief engineer. And then there's Joe Hoppel, the icon of country music at WCMS for 30-plus years. The eight of us came together to bid goodbye to a friend, a colleague, a master of the light touch with his music. He corresponded, he identified, he entertained a special breed of radio listener. Roger Clark had the rare talent of the one-on-one relationship to his audience. Each person, alone or with friends, always felt that Roger was talking directly to them. His success didn't make him rich in finances, he didn't care. But wealthy, he was, in devoted friends and fans. For over 40 years, through six decades, Roger's hall of hits, or his golden treasure chest of oldies, are, well, all the way to his most recent make-believe ballroom at WFOG. Roger kept up a close relationship with his fans, by telephone, by personal appearances, at dances, by corresponding with letters. He was at parties, he was at reunions and clubs in Hampton Roads, and, yes, bar mitzvahs, and maybe a wedding or two. Knowing the musical preference of hundreds he met in face-to-face encounters, Roger was able, of course, to gather together a mix of music that pleased more, that was never a bore. Roger was always mindful to make sure his audience knew the name of the artist they were listening to. Bunching tunes together in nameless clusters was never Roger's way. Guessing was for contests. Roger's theory was it was nice to know who was singing, and if it had been a hit, and what the title was, and what year was it a hit. Then there was always a story, a little story behind the scenes, a look to further his fans' appreciation of the recording artist. There's never going to be another Roger Clark anywhere behind anybody's microphone. He never worried about deep, resonant voices, or about whether to shout over the intro, about packing the introduction of the record with a recent history of the station stuffed into 7 seconds, and by shouting along with the weather, the time, and the plug for the next disc jockey coming along in line. Roger's simple credo, the artist, the musician, laid down the music track. They worked hard to perfect it. Roger figured their fans would enjoy hearing the whole record. Well, with both of our careers at the point where we could take things a little easy, we took on weekend shifts at WFOG and WHRO. Our stop time on Sunday mornings coincided right at 6 a.m. And over the, well, past 2 years and more, Roger and I began breakfasting together at about 6:30. Mostly, Roger would bring printouts of station ratings, copies of USA Today, trade magazines, some trivia about musical personalities, Xerox, and the Sunday Daily Break from the Virginian Pilot. It was filled with juicy radio and TV gossip gathered by Cynthia Hansen. Who were the gurus pulling the strings of the inner reaches of the K stations and the Qs and the Stars and the Foxes, and is there a Wolf out there somewhere? And what is a Jams? Roger would demand. I put the paper aside soon enough, and he'd begin his weekly lecture to me on how I could improve my life. And later, his greatest pleasure was a new and state-of-the-art computer that he'd acquired recently to finally catalog and cross-file thousands of recordings he'd collected in the more than 40 years of broadcasting. Roger's legacy, a total of millions who listened to him in the 1940s and 50s, throughout the 60s and 70s and the 80s, and ending only in the first half of the decade of the 90s and the 20th century. It remains for us survivors of the golden days of radio to keep alive traditions like the credibility of the Edward R. Murrows, the Lowell Thomases, the memory of snapping on your radio at night and listening to the Glenn Miller Orchestra at the Glen Island Casino, Joe Louis decking Hitler's boxing champion, Max Schmeling in the 1930s, and you were there, George Hicks on a landing craft approaching the French coast on D-Day, Herb Morrison, hysterical at the spectacle at Lakehurst, New Jersey, of the Hindenburg going down in flames, and the death of a little girl, Kathy Fiscus, an entire nation praying for her survival after she'd fallen into an abandoned well. So much news, so much information and entertainment came from that little box, the radio, on the kitchen cabinet or on a bedside table, in the dash of one's 48 Pontiac, or the big console in the living room. And you know, with the advent of the transistor, radio was truly everywhere. In Hampton Roads, the radio carried Rogers' music to the beach in the summer, aboard the Navy's great ships when in port. A fella could hook a blue or two out on the bay, or maybe a catch of smut on a early Sunday evening. A student up overnight cramming for exams would have Rogers' musical treats for company. That can't stop. It mustn't stop. A way has to be found to perpetuate his memory every time we get near a radio. Will wanted to evoke pleasant memories of a man whose love for the art of broadcasting was unsurpassed. A memorial on a pleasant grassy knoll is just not enough. A way will be found, must be found. And we'll have some help from colleagues, friends in the industry, and that legion of fans out there, the listeners, the future audiences waiting in the wings to be introduced to the bands, the singers like Sinatra and Perry Como and more. Roger, all the while keeping meticulous records of the most popular tunes in each decade, each record, and we can only hope to present his music the way he'd have done it. We better get it right, because I have the feeling that wherever Roger is, he'll find a radio station somewhere, and with his headphones draped around his neck, he'll plug in and he'll monitor our every move. His theme said it all. Strange, what a song can do. A song can mend a rift between lovers, set the mood for an evening of candlelight and dinner, and make every dance a dream for two. Friday afternoon at 2, a short service gave way to the bittersweet task for Gene Loving and Dick Lamb, and Bill Bills and Mike Russell and Bill Walker, Joe Hoppel, and Dave Dessler, of bearing Roger to his last resting place, far from his hometown of Boston, to Forest Lawn in Norfolk here in Hampton Roads. Norfolk, Roger's home for over 40 years. Roger never told me face to face, but I've been told recently that in fact he considered me his closest friend. The first line of this tribute, I jokingly compared my finances to an old colleague and called myself poor. Well, that was only in jest, because the memory of my 35-year relationship and association with Roger Clark makes me the richest of men. As you might imagine, when the curtain would lower on his life, there had to be music. His kind of music, and only one recording would be equal to the moment. The orchestra, and the trumpet of Harry James, and the velvet voice of Marion Morgan. Is it any wonder that the eight of us, the men who played millions of records in our professional lives, felt a rush of emotion and compassion, yes, and heartfelt sorrow at the loss of a dear, dear friend, a true professional, a professional in a profession where that breed is becoming an endangered species. Roger Clark, 1924, August 14th, 1990. God bless his memory.
Oh, it's Roger Clark.
Good luck.